The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 10, texts number 12 and 13, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 17th, 2012, in Melbourne, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narjuna Uvacha. Parang Brahma Parang Dhamma. Tavitrang paramang bhavan purusham shashvatam devyam adidevam vajang vibhum ahustvam rishayasarve devarshir naradastata asito devalo vyasa svayam shaiva bravishime. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna said, "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyas confirm this truth about you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me." Purport. In these two verses, the Supreme Lord gives a chance to the Mayavadi philosopher. For here it is clear that the Supreme is different from the individual soul, Arjuna, after hearing the essential four verses of Bhagavad Gita in this chapter, became completely free from all doubts and accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He at once boldly declares, "You are Parang Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And previously, Krishna stated that He is the originator of everything and everyone. Every demigod and every human being is dependent on Him. Men and demigods, out of ignorance, think that they are absolute and independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That ignorance is perfectly removed by the discharge of devotional service. This has already been explained in the previous verse by the Lord. Now, by His grace, Arjuna is accepting Him as the Supreme Truth in concordance with the Vedic injunction. It is not that because Krishna is Arjuna's intimate friend, Arjuna is flattering Him by calling Him the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. Whatever Arjuna says in these two verses is confirmed by Vedic truth. Vedic injunctions affirm that only one who takes to devotional service of the Supreme Lord can understand Him, whereas others cannot. Each and every word of this verse spoken by Arjuna is confirmed by Vedic injunction. In the Kena Upanishad, it is stated that the Supreme Brahman is the rest for everything, and Krishna has already explained that everything is resting on Him. The Mundaka Upanishad confirms that the Supreme Lord in whom everything is resting can be realized only by those who engage constantly in thinking of Him. This constant thinking of Krishna is smadhanam, one of the methods of devotional service. It is only by devotional service to Krishna that one can understand His position and get rid of this material body. In the Vedas, the Supreme Lord is accepted as the purest of the pure. One who understands that Krishna is the purest of the pure can become purified from all sinful activities. One cannot be disinfected from sinful activities unless he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. Arjuna's acceptance of Krishna as the Supreme Pure complies with the injunctions of Vedic literature. This is also confirmed by great personalities of whom Narada is the chief. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one should always meditate upon him and enjoy one's transcendental relationship with him. He is the Supreme Existence. He is free from bodily needs, birth and death. Not only does Arjuna confirm this, but all the Vedic literatures, the Puranas and histories, in all the Vedic literature, Krishna is thus described, and the Supreme Lord himself also says in the fourth chapter, quote, although I am unborn, I appear on this earth to establish religious principles. He is the supreme origin. He has no cause, for he is the cause of all causes, and everything is emanating from him. This perfect knowledge can be had by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Here Arjuna expresses himself through the grace of Krishna. If we want to understand Bhagavad Gita, we should accept the statements in these two verses. This is called the Parampara system, acceptance of the disciplic succession. Unless one is in the disciplic succession, he cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. It is not possible by so-called academic education. Unfortunately, those proud of their academic education, despite so much evidence in Vedic literatures, stick to their obstinate conviction that Krishna is an ordinary person.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsha.
So Arjuna is not speaking whimsically. Arjuna is following the Parampara system by speaking what is heard from authorities. This is why he's stating here in the second verse, all the great sages, such as Narada, Sita, Devala, and Vyasa, confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. In other words, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita are not something new and different. It's simply repeating that which has already been spoken by the great authorities. This is how spiritual knowledge is to be understood. What has been spoken before by the great authorities, you see, that is spoken again. It's not that something new has to be invented. If something new is invented, it is not bona fide. It is concoction. You see. The authorized knowledge is what has been spoken by the previous authorities. Just like in India, during the mango season, the harvesting season for mangoes, they will station a number of workers up and down the mango tree. One goes to the top at various levels on the tree, you see. And then so the worker on the top, he will pick the mango, he will hand it to the next person, it comes down. So you get the mango without being bruised, you see. Now if you didn't have those workers up and down the tree, and you just took a stick and shook the tree, then the mangoes would fall to the ground and become ruined. A bruised mango is useless, you see. Useless. So, in the same way, spiritual knowledge is carefully handed down from previous authorities. Let's see. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 2. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu. This knowledge was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. So this system, parampara system, the siblic succession, is how we have to understand spiritual knowledge. If someone claims to be a spiritual master, you have to ask him, what is your parampara? In what siblic succession do you come? Who are you representing? He says, well, I just represent myself. Then you get away as fast as you can, you see. He's bogus. Guru cannot be self-made. A guru means someone who is purely repeating what he has heard in the siblic succession. He has heard from his spiritual master, who heard from his spiritual master, back to the original spiritual master, who is Krishna. Krishna is called Adi Guru, the original spiritual master. So all the great authorities, you see, there are 12 great Vedic authorities. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapila Manu Prahlado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vayasakirvayam. All these great Vedic authorities, you see. Svayambhur. They all accept Krishna is the supreme authority. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Narada Muni, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila Dev, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj. These are the 12 great Vedic authorities. And they all accept that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So we understand from these great Vedic authorities that Krishna is the Supreme. Arjuna is reconfirming what the great authorities have already declared. So if we can put our faith in these great acharyas, you see, this is called Acharya Mag, the pathway of the previous acharyas. If we can put our faith in these great acharyas, and we can follow this line, this acharya line, you see, then we gain perfect knowledge, you see. You don't have to be a great yogi or a great Sanskrit scholar. If you can simply hear that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead from the authorized authorities, and accept that, you see, then you have realized the highest truth. It's not difficult to realize the highest truth. You simply have to accept Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Then you become the greatest yogi, the greatest transcendentalist. By accepting this one simple point, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So, what do you gain by that knowledge? What do you gain by applying that knowledge? That state of recognizing the supremacy of Krishna, that is called Krishna consciousness. What do you gain by being Krishna conscious? What you gain is a relationship, an active, dynamic, potent, real relationship with that person who is the source of everything. And this is very important. Just like when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. Just like when you feed your belly, your entire body becomes nourished. When you can connect yourself with that supreme person who is the source of everything, who is the root of everything, the root of the entire creation, the entire existence. When you connect yourself with that person who's the root of everything, you're connected with everything. You see, you're not disconnected in any way. You're fully connected with everything when you connect with that supreme person who's the source of everything. So how do you connect? The word for connection in Sanskrit is called yoga. We think about yoga means the exercises. Well, that's only one of the types of yoga, you see. There's many, many types of yoga. There's philosophical yoga. There's the exercise yoga, meditational yoga. So many types of yogas. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 47, yoginam api sarvesham yad gatina taratmana shadavam ujite yomang soma yukta tamo mataha. Out of all the yogis, the one who always thinks of me within himself, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So about all the different linking processes, all the different yoga processes whereby one connects with that supreme person, the process of bhakti is described by Krishna as being the topmost process. So What is bhakti? That is described by Prahlad Maharaj, one of the great Mahajanas. It consists of 9 different activities: to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's name, to remember Krishna, to bow down at the feet of Krishna, to serve Krishna, to worship Krishna, to give everything to Krishna, to make a friendly relationship with Krishna. These are the items. And it all begins with hearing. Just like now you're hearing about Krishna. You're hearing this discourse on Bhagavad Gita. So you have begun the process of bhakti. Just by hearing this lecture, you've begun the process of bhakti, you see. And by you hear, and then if you chant in the kirtan, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Now you've done 2 of the processes of bhakti. You heard about Krishna, now you chant in Hare Krishna. And what's the result of hearing and chanting about Krishna? Now you can remember him, you see. Now it's easy to remember Krishna. So that's the 3rd one. So in this way, it's not difficult to do bhakti. You just have to get connected to the bona fide spiritual master, to the bona fide devotees of the Lord who understand Krishna in the parampara system as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you get connected in this way, your whole life becomes transformed. You don't have to become a monk or go to the Himalayas. You can do what you're doing already. Arjuna did not become a monk and go to the Himalayas, you see. Arjuna is the perfect recipient of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. He remained a professional. He remained a family man. He kept his position in the society, but he became the greatest yogi, the greatest transcendentalist, the greatest realized sage, even while he's fighting a battle. So you may have to go to work tomorrow morning, you see. That's your battlefield of Kurukshetra. You see? But just do what Arjuna did. Recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Person. And say, okay, now I'm going to devote my life to Krishna. Whatever I have belongs to Him, you see. Now my home will be a place to remember Krishna, you see. I'll make my home like an ashram. There'll be pictures of Krishna there. They'll have the Bhagavad Gita there. It'll be a place where I go and I hear and chant the glories of the Lord. I'll offer my food to Krishna before I eat it. In this way, if you turn your home into an ashrama, you see, then you can become a great yogi, a great transcendentalist, even while you pursue your career goals here in Melbourne, you see. You don't have to abandon your material activities. Simply spiritualize them. You see, Krishnize all of your material activities. That's what Arjuna did. He was a warrior by profession. So he Krishnized his warrior talent by doing it on the Lord of Krishna. You see, by acting as a warrior for Krishna. Because that was his nature, to be a warrior. You see. So whatever nature you have, take that and engage it in Krishna's service. And then you become a liberated soul. So what does it mean to be liberated? What liberation means is you've been caught up in karma chakra for millions and billions of lifetimes, going through the 8,400,000 species of life as described in the Vedas. Jaladad Navalakshani Stavalaksha Vingshati Krimiyo Rudya Sankhyaka Pakshinam Dashilakshanam Trintalakshani Pashavaha Chaturlakshani Manashaha. You have gone through 8,400,000 different species again and again and again and again. Most of them are not human. Only 400,000 of them are human. So you've been a plant, you've been a fish, you've been a beast, you've been a tree, you've been a worm, you've been a reptile, you've been a bird, you've been a four-legged beast. Birth after birth, millions and millions of times, and every time you have to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. So it gets kind of old after a while. I mean, how long can one be happy, you know, going through birth, death, old age, and disease? It's actually a very miserable situation. But it's not you. You're actually an eternal spiritual being, an inhabitant of the spiritual world, but you forgot your identity. You thought to try to enjoy this material existence, you see, and it's not really enjoyable. But through this process of reconnecting with God, now you get out of the cycle of birth and death. You get mukti or moksha. You get liberated. Not into some impersonal conception of merging into oneness and losing your identity. That's called sayuja mukti. That type of moksha is only temporary. Most of the gurus and swamis talk about that kind of moksha, but that's an inferior type of moksha, which is only temporary. It doesn't last forever. The eternal mukti, the eternal moksha, is to reestablish your loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. You see? From that position, Krishna says, punar janma navijate, they never come back again to the cycle of birth and death. So why not invest a little energy in developing your Krishna consciousness, you see? Come regularly to this temple, get some japa mala, chant everyday japa mala, take up a vegetarian diet if you don't know already, offer your food to Krishna. Why not just do a little bhakti? It doesn't take much time. It's just a matter of adjusting your consciousness a little bit. When you get up, instead of thinking about the morning rush hour traffic, get up and chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes, you see. You'll be amazed at the difference it makes in your day. Instead of get up and really thinking about slugging it out in the traffic jam, get up and a little earlier and take your bath and take those beads and sit down in front of your little altar, your Krishna altar, and just chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Meditate. You see, a human being is meant for meditation. You are meant to meditate. Human beings meditate. That's the difference between an animal and a human being. A human being can meditate. He reconnects with God through the art of meditation. And the perfect meditation is this Hare Krishna mantra. This is called real, Prabhupada calls it real transcendental meditation, this Hare Krishna mantra. So if you make this a daily practice, you'll be absolutely amazed. And your co-workers will be amazed. They say, wow, what happened to you? I've never seen you looking so blissful. Well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna now before I come to work. Oh, really? How do I do that? Let me try it too. You see? That way we can make a revolution. Just by chanting Hare Krishna, you can make a revolution on this planet, you see. Actually, the whole world is suffering due to a lack of Krishna consciousness. They're saying, well, you know, we just have to tighten up the security. We just have to do this and that. But they don't really know how to solve the problem. These politicians don't know how to solve the problem. They do not know that the real problem we have is we're lacking our connection with God. Just like a good example is the European Union. Now, I'm from the U.S., and it was formed back in around the late 1700s. But the founding fathers of the U.S., they had the idea of God. They mentioned God a lot in their original documents, you see. And the U.S. now is going strong. It's a union of 50 different states. It's been going strong now for over 200 years. They had the concept of God was there in the founding fathers, the founding documents. Look where God is mentioned in the founding documents of the European Union. Where is God mentioned in the European Union? Nowhere. It's absolutely, completely, totally godless, the European Union. And just see, after only a few years, it's on the verge of crumbling, you see. You see? And they can't figure out why. They don't understand. It's because they didn't base it on God, therefore they're having difficulty, you see. That's the difficulty. As soon as we base our life on God, then it becomes very beautiful and wonderful. You try to do it without God, you know, well, we believe in Darwin here, you see. We don't need God because we have Charles Darwin. Will Charles Darwin save you the time of death? He couldn't save himself with the time of death. You see. But if you can remember, now the leading thinker is, what is his name? Dr. Stephen Hawking. He's considered the leading scientist now, the biggest brain on the planet. And what does he say? He says this universe comes out of absolutely nothing. Now I ask you, where is the scientific proof that you can ever get something out of nothing? How many of you ever made popcorn before? Anybody ever make popcorn? Nobody makes, you don't have popcorn in Australia? You do have popcorn? Do you get it out of an empty pot? No, you put some kernels in there and then you get your popcorn, you see. So Dr. Hawking wants us to believe that you can get the universe out of absolutely nothing. And he says, this is science. This is not science, this is nonsense, you see. So when you have a society where the government leaders say, yes, these are the great pundits who are showing us the way out of the darkness, and what they're teaching it is complete garbage, how are you going to expect the society to progress? When the basis of the society is garbage, how can you expect the society to make progress? It will not make progress, except into further nescience, further darkness. You see, that means the society will disintegrate, it will crumble in due course of time. You see, like the European Union is crumbling, you see. If you want to have a peaceful, happy, sane existence on this planet, base it on God, you see. Base it on Krishna or God, you see. Not that everyone has to say the word Krishna. If you're a Jew, you can say Jehovah, that's all right. If you're a Muslim, you can say Allah, but everyone has to develop saintly qualities. You see, a true God-conscious person is a gentle person. He's a saintly person. He loves the Supreme Lord. He loves all living beings, seeing them as part and parcel of God. You see, a person who is hateful is not spiritual. A true spiritual person is full of love. He has love for God. And he loves all living entities because he sees them as God's children. Every living entity, even a little ant. Therefore, we don't eat meat. How I can eat my little brother? You see? Does that make sense? To eat my little brother? Because he's less intelligent than me, that gives me a right to kill him and eat him? You see? But that's... They can't understand. They're wondering, why so much brutality happening in Syria now? Why so much brutality? But they don't see the brutality they are doing every day in the slaughterhouses. Horrible, unspeakable brutality every single day for cows and other innocent creatures in the slaughterhouses all over the world. And they wonder, why are people being so brutal in Syria? You see? We are promoting brutality in the form of the slaughterhouse. Brutality is okay. We're eating brutality at McDonald's. You see? We're sanctioning, the government leaders are sanctioning the most horrible, atrocious, unspeakable brutality. And we wonder why the brutality is happening in Syria. It's simply a manifestation of what we're already doing to the innocent creatures. You see? There's not that much difference between a cow and a human being. They're both living creatures. If you can brutalize a cow, then the next step is to brutalize a human being. You see? Not that much different. The cow has feelings, the cow has emotions, just like you do. If you can brutalize a cow, the next step is to brutalize a human being. Therefore, these slaughterhouses must be closed immediately. Otherwise, you'll never have peace on this planet. Not in 1,000 years, not in 1,000,000 years will you ever have peace in this universe until you close those rascal slaughterhouses. You'll never have peace. So because they have no God consciousness, they can't understand these things. They're addicted to the taste of flesh and blood. They cannot understand, you see. But if you can hear from a bona fide spiritual master, if you can read bona fide scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, then you can get an awakening of higher intelligence. You already have a higher intelligence within you because you are a spiritual being. You are not a creature of this world. If you hear from a bona fide guru, you hear from bona fide scriptures, then you get a reawakening of your original divine intelligence, your original divine consciousness. And you go, yeah, that's right. You reconnect with your actual eternal identity as a spiritual being. And then you know you gain the intelligence. Krishna within the heart gives you the intelligence how to think, how to speak, and how to act in all times, places, and circumstances for your benefit and the benefit of everybody that you deal with. You see, so this is what we need. You see, we need a class of men and women on this planet who become spiritually awakened. That is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement. We want to bring spiritual awakening to everyone in every corner of this planet so that everybody can be peaceful, prosperous, and happy on this planet. You see, that is our mission. Even we want the animals to be happy and the plants also. Let everyone be happy. That is our mission of the Krishna consciousness movement. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Krishna says in the Gita, When you approach the spiritual master, you must inquire. So you have Krishna has ordered you to ask questions.
You mentioned that a spiritual person is not an angry person.
He's not angry?
Angry.
He's peaceful, that's right.
He's peaceful. How do we manage that anger? Because I suffer from anger a lot. So
okay.
How do I manage that anger?
Mm-hmm.
Hare Krishna.
So you're wondering what to do about it?
What to do.
Yes. Uncontrolled anger is a symptom of one who is under the influence of the material nature. So what if I'm a devotee, but I have an anger problem? I mean, some of us, actually all of us have anger problems to different degrees. You're not the only one. We all have anger problems to different varying degrees. So what does one do then? It's called krodha vegam. You see? It's the pushing of anger. What does one do then if he has this anger problem? The first thing is this. Try to see how the loving hand of Krishna is blessing you at every minute in every situation. There's nothing to be angry about. Even if somebody is cruel to you, sir, actually it is your own karma. You were cruel to them in a previous birth and now they're simply paying you back. So what you're angry about is actually what you did. You're getting your own reaction. It's like throwing a tennis ball on the wall. It comes, bounces back at you. You get angry at the tennis ball. But you threw it against the wall. So why are you angry? You threw it against the wall. You're angry at that tennis ball for hitting you in the face. But you threw it against the wall. So instead of being angry, just think, well, I have to start acting more intelligently so I don't stop getting all these reactions. That person that gave you a hard time, they were just the DHL man for your own karma, Prabhu. They were the DHL man delivering you your karma. That's all. They're not the responsible party. You're responsible. So in this way, if you have this understanding, one can conquer anger. Now, there is one department in which you can use anger very nicely. And that is if someone blasphemes the Lord, then you're supposed to become angry. So why don't you use your anger, you see? Why don't you be angry about the slaughterhouses, you see, and do something to preach and distribute this knowledge to change the world situation. That's the proper utilization of anger, to be angry at how the leaders are misguiding the human society and then become a preacher to counteract their nonsense. You see that? Preaching is actually also a proper utilization of anger. I'm very angry. I'm fighting mad. My blood is boiling right now. I'll tell you right now, my blood is boiling to see what these leaders are doing to this planet. My blood is boiling. And so I'm using my anger to preach. I'm traveling, I'm on a world tour. My wife over here, we travel. Vishnupriya Devidasi sitting right there. We travel all over the world. We take two world tours every year to preach this message, you see, because we're angry about this, how the leaders are misguiding the world. So we're trying to create some higher understanding so people won't support these leaders anymore, you see. Mostly it's democratically elected leaders. So we're electing them. That's our foolishness, you see. Because the electorate is uneducated. We are electing these leaders that stimulate our anger. So now we have to educate the electorate so they don't vote for such nonsense people anymore. We get some decent people like our Yudhisthira Maharaj or Parikshit Maharaj to lead this Australian country or the U.S. country, you see. We need some good leaders. We need qualified leaders. We don't have them right now, you see. We don't have qualified leaders. In any country I've seen, there's no qualified leaders anywhere on this planet right now. The whole world society is like a chicken with its head cut off. So use your anger in a very positive way, you see. So on the one hand, control your anger. But whatever is happening to you personally, don't get angry about it. Be very tolerant of it. At the same time, when you see how much the world is being misguided, you must be angry about that. Learn this knowledge and distribute this knowledge, you see. That's the proper utilization of anger. In this way, you'll become completely cool-headed. You go, wow, this is great. Now I can be cool. Cool-headed, Prabhupada, I said. Prabhupada said, keep a cool head, Prabhupada said, you see. So be cool, Prabhu. Yes.
Is there any place for saintly persons to engage in political action? I'm here, I came late, but I heard you talking about Syria and karma, and I'm thinking, you know, to just say it's all their karma, can saintly persons engage in political action to change?
Yes, yes. In fact, Prabhupada, back in the old days, Prabhupada actually started a political party called In God We Trust. Prabhupada started a party called the In God We Trust Party. We ran candidates in various cities. But then we stopped it because it's illegal in the U.S. for a church to do that. You lose your status as a church. We actually had a devotee ran for the mayor of Atlanta. We had a devotee in Gainesville. Our temple president ran for the city council. He got quite a few votes. We campaigned for him and got... We had somebody running for the mayor of Dallas, Texas. So Prabhupada was very much in favor of devotees being active in politics. But the society, we stopped it because ISKCON itself cannot promote that. But any individual devotees who want to run for office, go for it. You see, we can't do it. The ISKCON society cannot be part of your campaign because we lose our tax exempt status. But we're with you, Prabhu. Go for it. If you want to get out there and get a post and get in the government, do it. We need qualified people who understand Krishna as the Supreme in every level of politics, local, state, national, in the UN, on every level we need Krishna conscious politicians. Please, if you have that inclination, do it with our full blessings. Okay, any other questions? So the beads are being passed around now. One devotee will be heading it up. A nice japa mala session. This japa mala is very, very... We encourage everybody to participate in this japa mala meditation session. This gives you a taste of what you can do every day in your own home. This japa mala is a perfect way to connect with Krishna. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here, and I thank you all very much for coming tonight to the Hare Krishna Temple. I hope you've gotten a deep, deep spiritual enrichment experience that you can carry with you forever. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Raja Vidrashimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.